Some companies are out there capturing demand from the markets and doing it well. Then there are other companies that are doing things differently. Maybe it's an innovation that the world hasn't fully understood yet. Maybe it's a break from the status quo in the industry that actually puts the client's needs first. These companies need someone that is championing the change they wish to make in the world, bringing aha moments to folks that didn't realize there was a way to solve a problem they assumed was just a cost of doing business, and building a community of people that believe in this new way. That is the role of the chief evangelist. And as AI continues to change the landscape, this role of the evangelist is continuing to pick up steam, but it isn't widely understood. So that's why we're bringing Ethan Butte, the chief evangelist at BombBomb and the host of one of my favorite podcasts, the Chief Evangelist Podcast, on this show to demystify what I believe to be the most crucial skill set companies will need in the next 10 years. We get into what the role of the business evangelist looks like and who needs one, how should a chief evangelist be incentivized and measured, and why we believe that the future of the role so much that he started this podcast that has become one of my favorites. So hang on. This is a really, really great conversation. Ethan is an amazing communicator, as you can imagine, as an evangelist. And it's really one of my favorite episodes I've ever done. And of course, did it as a live internet talk show because this is what I evangelize. I evangelize the value of this as a way to make content, meet the people that you want in your ecosystem, and build relationships with the folks that you want to do business with, all while creating a community on the back end. So, you know, hope that you join us one of these days. It's on Mondays at 4:30. And then after that, we go into an open mic session where we all jam and make content together. But for now, just enjoy the genius of Ethan Butte. If you know how it is, then you know how it might be. But think what it would look like if you grow your own community. It ain't easy. That's why you're listening to hear experiences from others just like you and me. Welcome to the B2B Community Builder Podcast, a show that was started because if you can unlock the power of having a community around your business, then you will create a source of referrals, validation, marketing content, and product feedback that will be unbeatable. But who has time to think about building a community when you need to be making sure that your team has what it needs to succeed in serving clients and bringing in revenue? That is why we'll be talking to business leaders like you and I that have cracked the code on why the community play is so valuable, how to implement tactics that got them there while still serving short-term goals, and what they can teach you that they have mastered. This show's for you if you are a CEO, CMO, or simply a rainmaker that has realized that without a community, you are just a commodity, but haven't figured out how to add it to your infinite list of priorities. This show is for you if you are a community professional or trying to be a community professional that is trying to convince leadership about the need to invest in a community strategy. This show is not for you if you think transactions are more valuable than relationships. I am your host and chief executive connector, Pablo Gonzalez, co-founder of BeTheStage.live, a marketing company that specializes in relationship-driven growth. I invented the relationship flywheel, and hopefully, I'm your new best friend. So smash that subscribe button, leave a rating when you do, and get ready to plug into the power of community creation for business development. Let's go. Welcome, everybody, to B2B Community Builder Show. I'm your host and chief executive connector, Pablo Gonzalez. And today we have a conversation that I have been dying to have about the role of the chief evangelist, why I believe it's going to be one of the biggest business trends in the upcoming decade. And to be our guest here today is a guy that has past star of the show, one of the original live shows that I ever did, when he released his best-selling book, Human-Centered Communication, all about the villain of digital pollution. And nowadays, I see that book in like airport bookstores, no big deal. He is the chief evangelist of an awesome
company that I'm also kind of obsessed with your culture and the way that you guys have approached community and category design and the way that you solve the problem. Ethan Butte, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being back. And that was a super kind setup.
Man, it's easy to do it with you, my friend. I want to welcome the community who's in the house. We got Michael Haynes back in the house from Sydney, my Australian friend, Michael Haynes. We got Lori Goldman, the super connector of community. She's out in Denver, man. She's out by your area, which maybe one day y'all will meet up. To kick this off, man, like I was telling you, I don't often interview people whose podcast I'm obsessed with and have listened to every single episode of, like yours, since you were the host of the Chief Evangelist podcast. I didn't get to say that in the intro, but I generally will start with like, why are we talking about this thing? I'm going to flip that a little bit on its head and kind of take your cadence of your podcast, which I like so much, and start with the question, what is the primary role of the chief evangelist, Ethan?
I should have seen this coming. I had a lot of directions I could go with it. I think I'll boil it down to the idea of exploring and creating shared belief. And by that, I mean, and it has wrapped into it a sense of community. I think shared belief, shared values, a shared perspective and understanding. But there's this kind of creation piece. I think the other direction I could have gone is like the aha moment. It's turning people on to something that they were not clear about. They may have been basically aware, but they didn't have that clarity around it. And so, for example, at BombBomb, we make it easy to record and send video messages in place of what is typically faceless typed out text. And so one of the ways around that is to get people to observe, hey, do you ever stop and think that every day you're entrusting some of your most important and valuable messages to faceless typed out text that doesn't communicate as clearly as you do when you look someone in the eye through the camera lens? It doesn't have any of the nuance or subtlety or emotion of what you're trying to communicate. Like, So people don't know that's a problem. It's just how we've done it for decades. And so there are a number of different, I have like 5 or 10 of those angles that I can take depending on the room, the audience, the situation. And the goal is to turn people onto this idea. It's not to say, hey, have you ever heard of a software company called BombBomb? You can buy it monthly or annually for yourself or for your entire company, like these kinds of things, right? And so there's this kind of problem solution dynamic, as well as, you know, the natural follow-up questions become the product questions. But it's a much bigger conversation. It's more interesting. It's more engaging. It's more consequential when you make it about this bigger concept. And so for us, it's about restoring the human to your digital communication in an increasingly noisy and polluted digital environment. And certainly the AI moment of like late 2022, when everyone got turned on to generative AI, because it could interact with it. And they're like, oh my gosh, this is a thing. This is crazy. I can't believe it. That further drives into this idea that there's going to be more faceless stuff that doesn't have authority. It doesn't have credibility. It doesn't have personality. There's no thing about it to connect to. I could monologue this, and I promise I'll stop. Monologue this for like 3 or 4 minutes, and you could say, okay, well, that's a, you know, decent sized blog post. What's going to be better though? The 90 seconds of me speaking extemporaneously about something that I care about a lot and have spent hours and hours studying through various people that are practicing the same role and concept, or reading it off a web page on your phone while you're standing in line at the grocery store? Like, what is going to leave more emotional resonance? What is going to be more provocative to you in terms of guiding your thought? I mean, the true essence of thought leadership isn't I'm the expert on this matter. It's I'm guiding thoughts. I'm pushing forward. I'm looking to the future. I'm trying to forecast where this is going. And I want to, you know, get your validation or tweaks or whatever, these kinds of things. And so I think it's around shared belief. And I think it's about aha moments at its core.
I love it, man. Creating shared belief and responsible for aha moments is your definition, man. How many episodes in are you on, Chief Evangel? That's an unfair question, right? Because I don't know how many episodes I have, and you probably have some in the can that you haven't released.
No, I've released 21.
Okay.
And I think I've recorded 26 or 27 total. And it's been really interesting and fun. I appreciate your engagement on it too, by the way. I knew it was a really niche thing, and I knew it would find people that are like, this is amazing. Like, I'm in a back and forth exchange right now with a woman who LinkedIn DM'd me on Friday, and she was like, I can't believe I just found this. And like over the weekend, just like, you know, message, message, message. She's cranking through the episodes. I'm like, It's a privilege. I know it's not a, like, it's a niche topic, but the passion for it, especially for people in it, adjacent to it, people who want to be in it, it's a great specificity.
Agreed, right? Like, I think you just told a story of creating aha moments and creating shared beliefs in what you're doing, right? So you are the chief evangelist of chief evangelists right now and doing it at a really, really high level, right? Which I'm not surprised. A lot to unpack in what you said, right? Like, number one is, I asked you how many episodes you have out, because if you haven't, friend that's listening to this podcast right now, if you haven't listened to Ethan's podcast, he starts every episode with that same question. And you get you essentially have 23 different answers, right? Some have, I think the last one answered word for word the same thing that Guy Kawasaki said, right? He said, like, the chief believer or something like that, which is really similar. But I've asked myself the same question a lot. Right. And I want to kind of unpack that a bit. I also want to get into, you mentioned thought leadership. I want to talk about the difference between evangelism and thought leadership. And I also want to talk about where this fits in the ecosystem. But to what you said of creating shared beliefs and aha moments, one of the things that became very clear to me as I really started getting on this journey, I guess I was just mentioning to you, right? All my frameworks and stuff come from charity work in the early 2010s. Is this idea that getting somebody to enlist on a mission is a much more powerful kind of like tool for lasting persuasion and cooperation than it is to try to convince somebody of a software, right? Like getting them aha moment and share beliefs. And when I think about my answer to that question as a category design fanatic, I think of you're the chief evangelist to be the tip of the spear of the point of view, right? Like, and that kind of is a shared belief, is an aha moment of doing it. And I think of somebody that's just like enamored with solving this problem, or like hates the problem so much that has to solve it, right? That it drives them to interacting with the marketplace, interacting with the ecosystem where the problem lies, gaining insights and creating content around it one way or another for mass communication. What do you think is the, if your job is to create shared beliefs and aha moments, what are the inputs of that? Like, how do you see the inputs of creating those outputs?
Yeah, I really like your language about tip of spear on point of view. That is key. Like, that's fundamental. And it's kind of, it's an organic piece. Like, you have some core beliefs. So for example, a core belief at BombBomb is that every human being has intrinsic value. People matter. Every single person matters. And so when you think about, you know, what that means in a digital context, when we take the dehumanization of people by system or circumstance in real life and think about that in a digital context, you can start drawing some parallels and start seeing some problem and solutions there. And so the point of view is alive, but it's based in, by that I mean like organic, growing, shifting, somewhat responsive to the moment, but not in but there's a fundamental basis there. So inputs to these things include a lot of customer intimacy. This is kind of an emerging back and forth on the show. I interviewed a guy, I think he releases in 2 weeks, a gentleman named Mark Gillum. He's an accountant and he specialized in rebate software, essentially loyalty programs. If you spend X amount of money or buy X amount of things, we'll give you this in return. And, you know, on an individual level, it's, you know, United Airlines, you know, points, right? But on a corporate level, it's, you know, hundreds of millions, if not even billions of dollars for some companies. And so this company hired him as a practitioner in the space who knew their software inside and out. And he had no speaking ability, He had no speaking experience, limited writing experience. Like, so they're taking him and allowing him to be like an engaged person from a customer perspective, whereas other people like you, for example, had all of these skills that you've developed over the years, and now you're applying to things that you're certainly excited about today. But the skills are like longstanding, and they came from a different point. So there are different ways to come at it, but customer intimacy, whether you were or are the customer, or whether you're engaging the customers to hear the stories, to hear the best practices, to hear the struggles and these kinds of things, engaging with employees throughout the organization and how they're engaging with the customer and the prospect and what they're thinking about. It's certainly, to the degree that you define the category or the market in a particular way, it's the other voices in the broader category and community. And so it's a blend, I guess, to conclude, it's a blend of what you know to be true and the principles that you're operating by, colored layered, filtered, nuanced, advanced, exercised, demonstrated, explored through other real practitioners inside and outside the organization, inside and outside the community at large. And that's the raw material that serves to inform the process. And so you're kind enough to mention human-centered communication off the top. Subtitle is A Business Case Against Digital Pollution. Steve and I decided to bring in, it was originally 10, but then as soon as Jocko Vanderkooy said he would join us, it became 11. 10's a rounder number, but 11 turns out to be awesome. You know, multiple perspectives on these themes and topics of how do we create real human connection as digital noise and digital pollution proliferate. And so that's a way of, you know, my own point of view about the problem and opportunity of building relationship in a place where attention is hard to get, trust is fragile and difficult and slow to build, quick to erode. We leaned on other experts who were friends of ours to kind of get their strategies, practices, philosophies, et cetera. So that's just one example of taking what we know to be true, the things we care about, our principles and foundations, and using other voices to kind of use our platform to amplify other voices, but then B, kind of color, characterize, and bring to life the ideas in a way that other people can relate to.
Man. So the first thing that I heard when you said that was like, oh, no wonder I'm obsessed with BombBomb. This idea that everybody has value is like the core tenet of the thing that has been like driving me for 9 years, right? Like, so that's neither here nor there. Anyways, the other thing that really rung out to me was this, that you just said customer intimacy. And I really haven't heard that term very much other than when I was at my business coach, Jerry McNamara's mastermind. He talked about these like three business model frameworks, which are essentially your business model can be product leadership, production capacity, or customer intimacy. And depending on what you are pursuing, are you trying to make the coolest, best widget? Are you trying to like serve the most people? Or are you trying to like duck and weave and bob and do what's right by the customer no matter what? Then it tells you how you allocate resources. And immediately I had an aha moment that's like, oh, that's the business model I'm trying to build. And I bring that up to say, to set up my next question, which is, I'm very curious what you think the type of company that needs a chief evangelist is. Like, how is it a certain size? Is it a customer intimacy only model? Is it only SaaS? Is it, you know, like whether it's a chief evangelist or the role of a real evangelist, maybe in a smaller company, it's the CEO who's also an evangelist. I'm curious to know your thoughts of like pre-qualifications for needing evangelism as part of what your company is able to execute on.
Yeah, I'll answer that question with one word and then two approaches to it. The word is innovation.
Okay.
I don't think stage super matters. I have talked with, some of them have been recorded episodes as well, but I've talked with people who are in, you know, 10 people, large, true startups. And of course, I've talked with people in, you know, several thousand person global companies as well. The biggest companies like Amazon, Microsoft, Google have multiple evangelists in a variety of different roles. One of the ways that this podcast and even my role itself came to be was, you know, I cold reached out to the chief evangelist of Alexa and Echo at the time. He was the first employee and voice at Amazon, one of several evangelists, and he agreed to do a podcast conversation with me. So size doesn't matter so much. The question is, are you innovating? And to that, I'll just speak to two different types of innovation. One is solving a problem that people don't know that they have. And that one is all about problem awareness. I would argue that BombBomb fits in that category. We're solving a problem that most people don't think about. They don't know that they have. I think when you look at what's going on, this is a little bit of an editorial monologue, a little bit off to the side. Wait. I'll get back to the second one in a minute. When you look at the way people are buying and selling video messaging software on whole outside our little piece of that market, I think a lot of it is gimmicky. It's exclusively for attention, not for a long-term play of trust and relationship. I think it's primarily being used in prospecting, which is a perfectly fine use case, but only if you adapt the prospecting to fit it. It's just such a myopic view about what the opportunity is. It's one of the reasons that I teach video messaging the way that I do, is that it's really for any message that you're typing out and sending, no matter the stakeholder, prospect, customer, recruit, team member, potential partner, current active strategic or referral partner, whatever the stakeholder category is, across that life cycle, there are opportunities to, you know, add video messages to bring it to life, to get back in front of someone, to have someone feel like they know you before they meet you, to explain something more clearly, et cetera, et cetera. So one of them is solving a problem people don't know that they have. The other form of innovation is solving a known problem, but in a truly unique way. I think that's why your love of category bleeds into this love of evangelism, which bleeds into your love and expertise, demonstrated expertise in community building, is that they're all in order to create a movement. And I know that word is kind of big, and it's certainly one that's been abused, not as badly as some other terms we hear in a business context. But I truly think of this video, like this first book, Rehumanize Your Business. I wrote that as an extension of a blog post that I wrote called You Are a Pioneer. And it was the point at which it dawned on me that this is a legitimate movement. I joined a company with almost no customers and almost no revenue. I wrote that post at my 6-year full-time anniversary, which I've almost doubled now. It'll be 12 years in September. Awesome. And I was just so excited and proud, not of myself, not of our company, but that this original founder's idea and founder's vision had come to life. And we had grown to, at that point, maybe 30 or 40,000 customers. And like, this was a thing. And there were millions of people coming behind us in this movement to rehumanize business communication. As it gets increasingly noisy, polluted, at a certain point, artificial, like straight up synthetic and artificial, how do we weigh that out? And so this idea of real people winning as their real selves, the human being as their own best differentiator, human to human moments being some of the most powerful moments in our lives and in our business, that there was a movement of people bringing that to life every day. And so I got way off on the topic, but it's innovation yeah. being solving a problem that people don't know they have. So you need to evangelize the problem.
Yeah.
The other one is solving a known problem, but in a truly unique way, driven by a point of view, to use that key term again, that drives the way that you're defining, approaching, and solving the problem. It helps define what features you build and which ones you don't, in the case that it's a tool or a software or something like that. It defines what goes into the service set. If it's a service type of business, the way that we see the world and the problem with the status quo and the problem with the way that people are solving the problem today is why we're doing it in this unique and different way. And so you're still evangelizing some of this problem, but you're evangelizing kind of against the status quo relative to the problem solution matchup at present, unlike in the first situation.
A lot of category language there, which I love. I also can't help but notice that both of the things that you talked about, your books and your podcast, have all been kind of the formula that I mentioned earlier, right? It's like you have a point of view on something, you interact with the rest of the ecosystem, it evolves that point of view, and then you create a piece of content that isn't just you, it's you plus other points of view that add to the ecosystem. I find that really, really interesting. When you first said innovation, I was ready to challenge you, man, right? Like I was like, okay, yeah, I get innovation. I get that that's part of it, right? And problem, like unobvious problem to obvious problem, category design, I'm all in.
There you go. Problem. I like that language too. So category one is non-obvious problem. Yeah. Category two is obvious problem, non-obvious solution.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Right. So like, I love that language. I'm all in on that language. In my head, I started thinking, isn't there more though, right? Like what you described to me is true. And then you started talking about this idea of trust, right? And I think that this is why I titled the show the way that I titled it, instead of just like, what's a chief evangelist? It's why I think it's going to be the biggest growing role, is this idea that in this world of rehumanizing business communications and in the need to go back to those basics, we've just got hit with this rapid acceleration of AI that's going to create a whole bunch of, is this real? Is it not real? And the need to establish trust long-term and be seen as a human, I think it's going to expand the tent of the role of the evangelist, right? Like, I wonder what you think about that.
Yes. And I'll extend this idea of trust. Like, what can I trust, right? It's one of the reasons my first reaction when people are like, ChatGPT and what Bing is doing, that's going to take over search. I'm like, I really like to know who's saying these answers. I like the attribution, not every domain. Like, so for example, one of the reasons I started the podcast is a bunch of chief evangelists came to me over time, or aspiring chief evangelists, or people thinking about appointing chief evangelists. And they were coming to me because a post that I wrote 4 years ago continues to rank second or third organically for the, just the straight up search chief evangelist. Yeah. There are one or two or three posts in front of mine. One of them is from Indeed.com, which is, has way better domain authority than the BombBomb blog, right where I published it. It's not a better post. It doesn't have better information. And I think when I search, I want to know, like, who is saying this? What is the point of view of those people? Is this actual, is this a, and no offense whatsoever, but is this a 22-year-old in a content marketing team cranking out some SEO work now with the help of AI? Or is this someone who's been in the space for 12 or 15 or 18 years and has thought about this from 15 different perspectives, has been in two different seats related to it, and is speaking with some degree of authority? And the trick is, when you remove that source, then we're losing any of the aspects of trust. Certainly hallucinations fit into this zone. Like, ChatGPT will give you everything back in the most authoritative voice possible, but it has no relationship to truth. And it will literally make things up, even with GPT-4. So trust, authority, credibility, these are all words. And then I'll layer in another one, authenticity. These are words that guests have used in the podcast in talking about why, usually it comes up in the zone of like, why a human being in this role, right? You have a marketing team, you have a sales team, you have a product team, you have a CS team, you have an executive leadership team. There are a number of people that are doing work that the evangelist brushes up against, you know, why a human being in this role? And it really is to kind of be this torchbearer, this aha moment, light bulb moment type person who has trust, who has credibility, who has authority. My credibility and authority in the space come from my having been in it for a dozen years. It, like, we sell to all kinds of people. All kinds of people could use video messaging. I've also sent more than 15,000 video messages myself over time. So when I'm teaching, yes, I'm telling customer stories and customer examples. I'm talking about how this team of 47 people implemented it successfully, but I'm also speaking from my own experience. And so if you throw into search or chat, like, top five uses for video messaging, who says and how, and give me some support for that. And so the ability to kind of curate all of this stuff from your own experience and from the experience that you've had the privilege of learning through community, through customers, through team members and employees, to package those up and to teach back in another format is that unique intersection of, like, I can trust this person. I'll just share one more big idea here that I think people will enjoy, because just because we're kind of on a pro-human tip. Warmth precedes competence. Every social judgment is made on the basis of warmth and competence. And we're looking for warmth before we're looking for competence. The colloquial way we say this is, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. We've all heard that. And it's trite, but it's also true. It's one of the ways that it gets that status, is like, it's true. We don't. And so when I say warmth, this means intent, motivation. Does this person seem to believe what they're saying? Do they seem to understand me or want to understand me? Have they been in my shoes? Are they speaking my language? Do they have, you know, their own kind of war stories that are related to my war stories? You know, these kinds of things. And once we start checking some of those boxes, people are all in. But until they can feel like they can make safe judgments relative to what you're sharing, this is just ancient evolutionary psych, ancient brain evolutionary psychology basics, totally, right? And so until we check those boxes, it's really difficult for people to get into the information and to start to deal with it. And another thing that we've trained ourselves through social media is to, you know, start reacting to the source rather than to the substance. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, we're getting it backward now, like anything this person says is true and anything their enemies say about them is not true, right? And we're not even dealing with the substance of the issue, whereas we've evolved as a social species to really judge the intent and motivation of that person. So I guess what we're doing in that scenario I just described is, you know, foregoing all judgment there and just, you know, deifying that person so that everything they say is true and wonderful. But most people don't operate that way in most cases. And so this idea of having a human being who has some authority and credibility in a sector, market, zone, practice, a technology, whatever the case may be. People can trust that. And it's hard for me to get excited before you're excited. It's hard for me to believe before I know that you believe. And those are things that are just hard to get off of a blog post or a PDF or a spreadsheet or an ROI calculator or whatever else. This is like really rich human to human stuff. And I think the value of human to human moments will increase because the demand will stay steady. We're all desperate to be seen, heard, understood, appreciated, feel part of something, et cetera. But the supply of it is diminishing. And so therefore the value increases. That's why it's a business trend, to answer your title.
Yeah, nailed it, man. Nailed it. I want to tie this into a bow because I want to move from the justification of the role into the how-to of the role.
Please.
But I don't know if you know this. And maybe when you were on my podcast, it wasn't called the B2B Community Builder Show yet. It might have back then been called the Chief Executive Connector Show. Because my giant thesis, and by the way, I look back now and I think, oh, that is the chief evangelist, right? And that came to me because my happiest kind of time as an employee was after my green building consultancy got absorbed by my biggest client. I went in-house for this outfit called Arellano Construction. Old man Arellano Agustin, he was a pillar of the community who, you know, went from being a Cuban immigrant drywaller to a general contractor to a construction manager who became one of the biggest healthcare construction manager outfits in South Florida, eventually acquired by a Spanish international conglomerate. And his method of business development was being very involved in the community. Right? Like a man of the community, right? Like into charities, very involved with things, a man of his word, somebody that would say, if you're not happy with the whole service at the end of it, we'll refund the entire contractor fee. And to me, I'm just like, man, this is the way that business is done, right? Like in the construction world, do you want to be somebody handing somebody an estimate and here's my price? Or do you want to be somebody that is, oh man, this is Agustin, the guy that has, you know, done this and XYZ and is a man of the community and whatnot. And you see that everywhere in small business, which was my big argument for the growing role. But it all comes back to what you just said. Warmth precedes competence and competence precedes trust, right? So, you know, you got to do it one way or another. And we can look at it bottom up or top down. Bottom up is this idea of if you're building a business and you're a service business inside a small community, people need to know who you are and what you stand for, and they need to feel that warmth before they believe your competence. If you are trying to scale out to the internet and put content out there and have it be believed and have it not just be like ChatGPT, Bree called out something you said that ChatGPT has no relationship to truth, right? Something with no relationship to the truth versus something that comes from a credible source, this role of evangelism and it being able to tie back to somebody that you can vet based on the fact that you know that they know something because they either are guilty by association with somebody that you know, or you've interacted with them yourself, or you have seen them speak directly in a video message or in a YouTube thing or a podcast or something that couldn't have been manufactured, I think is a really, really profound concept. So really well brought in by that analogy, man. I really, really like that.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Moving forward to the how-to of the role. What do you find yourself doing on a day-to-day basis, right? Like, what is your typical kind of like, and let's expand from you, right? Like, what do you find similar that you and the 23 guests that have been on the podcast, what are the similar things that you see the evangelist doing often as part of the role?
Yeah, I'll throw out a handful of kind of activity areas off the top of my head, and then I'll kind of dial into what it looks like for me, which I think characterizes a lot of it. You know, there's certainly the broader, you know, thought leadership stuff, blog posts, webinars, stage presentations, podcast guesting and hosting, this kind of stuff, like communicating the message, pushing it forward, these kinds of things, publishing ideas. One of the dynamics that we talk about often is external versus internal. Some people are in organizations where it's really critical to direct these ideas and this information to the rest of the team. And this idea got me, like, I've done a lot of that intermittently over time, but not with any consistent push. And one of the episodes, it really reminded me that one of the best ways to scale these ideas is to get it to all of your customer-facing people. Because now another like inside and outside scenario is, and this is something that I do, I will work with our account executives and I'll work with our customer success managers. I also sometimes work with our onboarding team and some other people to, you know, at their request to look at what they're doing, to give them some ideas, to kind of advance things in a different direction, et cetera. But, you know, this conversation comes up where, yeah, I can get invited in for 30 minutes to strategize an account approach with an account executive and then engage maybe for another 30 minutes with a couple people from the buying committee, let's say. But that doesn't scale as well as really getting in front of all the AEs to impart this information. There is something unique about an executive presence and this kind of non-threatening, hey, listen, I'm not here to talk, you know, price or features or seat count or any of that stuff. We're here talking about you, your business, some of the problems and opportunities that you're facing and whether or not we fit here. And I can tell you stories about other people like you and do some of my own, you know, diagnosis and prescription. I wouldn't bother to have them do the discovery again, because typically the salesperson's already done that. So that's kind of like in the middle. But this idea of, you know, the other way I've heard it said in another context is like train the trainers. Mm-hmm. So that's another kind of like inside outside dynamic. And so some people live outside. It's all about me and the market. It's analyst relations. It's public relations. It's publishing stuff, et cetera. Other people are very dominantly inside and they're doing inside training. So the episode that released last Thursday, Brian at Lucid, you know, he comes from a Scrum and Agile background. And so he teaches Scrum and Agile courses. So, and that's a story that I hear a lot. I will often do that myself as well, where, so for example, I just wrote about a 5,000 word blog post. It overcomes some of the biggest problems people have with video messaging, which is buckshot, ad hoc, I'm just going to try it and see what happens kind of a thing, versus for some of our upmarket accounts in particular. By upmarket, I just mean size of the company, size of the business, size of the opportunity, size of the problem, et cetera. You really need to dial it into one or two or three use cases in order to implement the practice of video messaging across a team of, you know, 172 people. Because you can't do a group training and say, here are 18 different ways that you all could do it. I could probably come up with 180 for almost everybody. But you can't teach people that way. You can't engage people that way. And so it's a method to diagnose and prescribe very specifically based on their highest value. It's written to the person so they can do it themselves. But I need to turn that into a deck now that I've kind of articulated these. I've kind of nice thing about doing a blog post versus a book, by the way, is you just keep updating it as you wish. Yeah, so exactly. I've updated it probably 8 or 10 times. I'm pretty close to calling it done. I need to turn it into a deck, and I'm currently working to tour it internally with a few different teams. And I'll also do an all company voluntary lunch and learn kind of a thing. And I've done that a number of different times. I did it like 2 or 3 different times with human centered communication, for example, because it's such a meaty topic with so many different things to teach and engage on. And so there's product feedback. A lot of people are deeply involved in product. An episode that'll be coming out, this guy at Alteryx, Joshua Burkow, he sits in the product organization and he is essentially doing a blend of product marketing and product feedback. But he was a user for 15 years. He implemented the world's single biggest install of Alteryx software when he was at PwC. And he went in-house there and now he's very based in the product team. And so you mentioned earlier that it could be a founder or an executive. It could be the CEO who is the evangelist. Dan Steinman from Gainsight offered in our first conversation, you're probably evangelizing. It's just a matter of whether or not you're doing it intentionally and in a way that is going to create some real momentum and drive the outcomes that evangelism can potentially drive. And so the origin of the evangelist, and this is true of most of them, it's a pretty bespoke thing. The position was created because the person emerged. In the case of Mark Gillum, who I referenced earlier, who I think will be episode 23 or 24, they knew him because he was giving a lot of product feedback. He was one of their best customers. And then he was in between roles. And so they're like, why don't we bring him in and have him teach everything he knows to all of our other prospects and customers? But in my case, it was, I came up in the marketing team. I had extensive customer contact throughout my entire experience. I had written literally hundreds, probably 700 blog posts over the years. I had already initiated the book project, and it just made sense to kind of liberate me from the day-to-day operations and let me do more of this that brings me to life and is useful to the customer, useful to the community, useful to the company. So it can look a lot of different ways, and the roles are all very dependent on who the person is. The roles are very much about who the person is as much as it is about the stage or situation in the company. There are probably companies that would love to have an evangelist if they could find one. And there are probably people inside companies that are doing the work of an evangelist, even though they haven't been appointed with that title and responsibility.
Totally.
Oof. That was a golden nugget right there. I'm going to have my team clip that and paste that across all my social media channels. So if you could just give this a pause right now, go into the show notes and connect with me on whatever platform you like to follow me on, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever you want to be a part of my life in, connect with me there. I'm going to share that clip and you can share it with your friends so that they get the same lesson. It'll be adding value to their life. And while you're at it, go ahead and subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Hit 5-star review, right? You don't have to leave a review. You just got to hit 5 stars. If you want to leave a review, cool. And maybe send the episode to your friend. That would be awesome. That's it. I'm done. Back to the show.
Man, listen, as I'm listening to you, I'm hearing essentially very similar functions. And then there's three different kind of like ecosystems that it can be specialized in and or all of the above, right? You said to the market, to the customer, and to the product team, right? Like, so, but at the end of the day, what I hear is, and I know everybody hears it through their own filter, right? Like, I hear the role of a networker, right? Like, it's a person that is able to take one context from one end to somebody and share it to multiple people so that they can be familiar with that context and then be, you know, and then have the message land contextually accurate to the actual context where it represents, right? So whether you are talking to clients all day long and figuring out what is useful, like it sounds like your role, right? Like you find what's useful to other client segments in BombBomb, and you bring it to different segments as well, or you bring it to a sales call or something like that, and you establish those use cases. You're also training the trainer in the fact of like being able to disseminate that information within the sales team themselves, or the marketing team, or the customer success team, to be able to have those stories themselves. And then you're also, I assume you're also, if there's an event, you're likely the one that's going to speak for BombBomb, right? Or depending on where it's coming from, that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, a couple things there. So we're fortunate to have 3 or 4, and I think it's because so many of us have sent so many videos, like the skills are transferable. So we have like, depending on the event and the topic in the industry, I do a lot of that, but we have 3 or 4 people that can do that really well. That's a mix and match. But to your point about networker, this is a whole nother zone or theme. I've had 2 private conversations and 1 episode on the podcast. It's really in this kind of social selling, dark social, online networking area, right? So these are people that are definitely coming out of the sales and marketing zone. And by dark social, we just mean, you know, word of mouth, but in a digital context. Dark being outside of easy attribution, but dark also being like off the radar. Like these are often private communities and you know, networking groups and things like that. And so being present where the conversations are happening to collect insights, not to be that jerk in the room that's like, but can I tell you about BombBomb? But have you asked me yet about BombBomb? Have you thought about asking me yet about BombBomb? Like, you know, so you're not selling per se, but you're networking, you're engaging in the conversation, you're bringing that market intelligence back to the, you know, to the people that need to hear it inside the company, whether it's product feedback or whether it's kind of language people are using or a new way to frame the problem for the marketing team to kind of write and publish around, for you to tweak your own message, et cetera. And so I just wanted to plus up this idea of networking in this particular context that a lot of people would call social selling. But in this case, you're selling ideas more than you're selling subscriptions or contracts.
Yeah. You know, I think networker gets this like dirty kind of connotation because of the business card spreader guy.
So many people do it badly.
Yeah, because people
do it. Same thing with sales in general. So many people do it badly that the great ones are greeted with suspicion.
Yeah. But I mean somebody like Lori Goldman, who is like the person in your community that's going to be the first person that introduces you to the person that she knows that she met earlier, that the two of you need to meet for no other reason than to create common good or to share practices or whatever, right? Like that person, whether they are internally inside the company focused on, oh, okay, this department over here is doing something that this other department needs to like gain that thing, right? Even in big engineering firms, they have these like, I don't know what it's called, but it's like the best practices kind of committee that just go project to project, trying to gather up institutional knowledge to then teach it to the rest of the institution. They themselves are chief, you know, internal evangelists of what the company is doing and disseminating that information and getting it to spread, right? So whether it is like super internally focused that sometimes makes it on the outside, very externally focused that also comes back to the inside, or some kind of amalgamation of both that is also a big part of product roadmap. I just see it as like the connector of ideas and people to produce outcomes that are more than just the sum of their parts. It's kind of where I think of a networker, which is what I see as what I see you doing, to be perfectly honest, right? Like you're the first guy that introduces me to somebody or will bring up something that you thought of or is happy to get on a call to talk about something that you couldn't care less about, except for the idea that you care about the person in front of you and you want to help them advance that situation. I think you yourself described it one time as like, hey man, I'm just kind of hired to just like help whoever's in front of me. Or I'm not sure who I heard that from. Was that you?
I don't know. I mean, I certainly can relate to it. I don't know that, yeah, I said it or that I didn't, but I can definitely relate to that idea. And I just want to, specific to the role, because a lot of people that will watch or listen to this will say, well, I do a lot of that. And I would just say, if you are and it's helping you, keep doing it. If it's something that you want to go deeper in, start looking at how you might get a commitment from the people around you to do it more often. Because where I'm at in my head on this is when you can liberate yourself from some of the obvious deliverables and really spend your time in this, that's where it really starts to get free. I mean, and by that, I mean, you still need to deliver value to the business that's obvious. And so I was in a setting the other day where someone kind of like, it wasn't aggressive or anything, but it was essentially like, and so what do you do around here? And it was a big group setting. So I was like, if you're an account executive or a customer success manager or account manager, raise your hand if I've been helpful for you on one of your accounts, right? And like 12 of the 14 hands went up, you know? So when you're free to say yes to more things, you're going to learn things you didn't expect to learn. You're going to meet people you didn't expect to meet. Any of us who's doing creative work, for me, it's like when three seemingly disparate ideas, one I picked up a week ago, one I picked up a year ago, and they just kind of like hanging around. And I don't know what to do with them yet, but then a couple things happen and it just triggers. That was the spark for that 5,000 word blog post, which I ended up writing in about a day, because it was all there and it was formulating, but like two or three things hit. And so I had the freedom to just go do it. And so it sounds like a luxury position for a lot of people, but as long as you are trusted by the people around you, this kind of gets into the measurement thing. Lots of people have tried to do measurement. I'll just hit that really quickly.
Yeah, I was going to go there next.
So. So people will do like Salesforce drop downs and say evangelist influenced or something like that if they touched an account. I know a lot of people will keep little praise folders in their inbox, or they'll screenshot nice things people say and kind of keep those at hand. So the blend of qualitative feedback there. But this Salesforce thing, like I influenced, you know, $278 million worth of revenue. Like, what does that really tell us? Really? I mean, it just means you touched 278, you touched some accounts that represent you. Like, what does that mean really? Like, so some of it, I mean, these, you got to do something and there's not a lot that's better, but at some level it's vanity. And to that, I'll point to two of the people that I just have incredible respect for is Dan Steinman. And his CEO, I see his face. His name escapes me at the moment. If it occurs to you, let me know. I can't believe the name escaped me, but I can see you're going to dig that out for me. Dan tried to quit. He had built the customer success organization at Gainsight. Nick Mehta. He had built the customer success organization. He's not an operations guy. He had this epiphany for himself and was like, I need to go. This is like, I'm proud of what we've done. There's someone else better to run this than me. This isn't my strength. It's not my passion. And he figured that Nick would let him go. Nick was like, well, listen, you're going to need to figure out what to do with you then, because I know every single time I put you in front of a group of people, the value of our business goes up. And so they came up with this chief evangelist title, and they worked to track and measure all kinds of stuff. And they did it for about 6 months. They had a bunch of different ways they approached it. And when they would get together, they'd look at it, and they ultimately came to the conclusion after a lot of effort, none of this really tells us anything. And so then Nick just, you know, again, this high trust environment of like, Dan, you're a badass. You know this inside and out. You were a customer before you built our entire customer success organization. We're a customer success software company. Go do your thing. And his entire charge was get in front of an audience of one person or more as often as you can. And that's it. So different people will set their own goals. I remember talking with Sangram Vajray when he was still at Terminus. And one of his goals was like, I'm going to do, I forget what the number is, but something like I'm going to do 28 speaking engagements this year. Was one of his own personal goals. So like you can manufacture some of your own activity measures, but this activity versus outcome is just so difficult that two of the people I regard as the best in the software business, at least, said this isn't worth the effort. So at a certain point, you're like, am I going to spend these 5 hours this month putting all these reports together and sharing them with people? Or am I going to spend those 5 hours connecting with customers and prospects and team members?
Yeah. Yeah, man, makes... You know, I obviously I've said this 10 times, but I listen to all your episodes. This idea that the person is always going to be a high trust person, right? Like this isn't, you're not going to hire somebody off of Indeed to be your chief evangelist. It's somebody that's proven their mettle, is a very, very high trust person. The other thing that I'm hearing is you can have input metrics, right? Like maybe you want to say, okay, I know that every time you're in front of people, things go better, right? Like you better the situation. In volleyball, there's something called bettering the ball, right? Every touch, you're supposed to make the ball a little bit better, right? You better the ball every time you touch it. So what are the scenarios where you touch the ball? Whether it's how many speaking engagements you do, how many podcasts you do, how many pieces of content you put out, what's your follower count on LinkedIn, whatever, whatever, how many sales calls have you been a part of, are all kind of like these like tangible things that you can put around it until you get to the point where you're just like, this person's aces and I know that they belong on this team and I want them just like interacting with as many things as possible because it always makes it better, is what I've taken away from your show, right? Like high trust person that you know going in that you got a pretty good rope for them, like pretty long rope for them because you trust in the outcome, figuring out some kind of like input that you can measure just to make you happy at first, but eventually like you just know it's working or you don't know it's working, right? Is kind of what I've taken away from it. I want to, in about 7 minutes, we're going to move into the open mic session. You're welcome to stay. I assume that you got stuff to do.
I'll check my calendar. I didn't know that was coming. That sounds fun.
It's cool, man. Yeah. Like I said, most guests end up, you know, having something else to do. But yeah, we're going to open mic session 7 minutes. I don't want to take too much time to belabor it, except for to tease it for our community that's here. Speaking of community, Ethan, it was actually BombBomb that made me realize this, right? That I really do believe that the holy triumvirate of company that I find compelling is category design, evangelism, community. And it was you who helped me disprove my first thought, which was, has anybody ever designed a category without creating a community? That was a big resounding no, right? But in the follow-up question was, can you design a category without having some kind of evangelism functioning at a high level? That answer is definitely you need evangelism at a high level. And then I want to evolve that question to ask you, in today's age, somebody that is an evangelist, right? Like take the, you know, zero or one on category out of the question. But if you are evangelizing today, is the goal community, or do you ever see another more important metric that isn't, man, how do we really identify this group of super consumers that we can cram together to get these insights to really magnify the evangelism part? I don't know if I asked that well. I guess what I'm asking is, how important is community to the evangelist as a North Star, in your opinion?
Well, I think it goes back to the initial kind of back and forth we had on the most important aspect of the role when you asked a follow-up question about the raw material. I think about community from the company's perspective as raw material. This is where the stories come from. This is where the support comes from. This is where the introductions come from. This is like all of the inputs that validate or that cause us to redirect, that allow us to stay out in front of this thing. So it's a critical component of the whole thing. I would also add that to the degree that it's a movement and you view it as such, I do. I think a lot of people do. When people talk about category and being the category leader, and this comes up a lot, I'm thinking of Jim Kaulbach at Mural, who was on episode 3. He was all about like the goal is to grow online collaboration. Like that's it. And when we do, and I say the same thing about video messaging, I've consulted for and taught people who use our competitor. I do it for a couple of reasons. One, I like to help. Well, I guess 3 reasons. One, I like to help people. And two, I care a lot about these ideas and practices in this movement. One of the reasons I did an episode of the Customer Experience Podcast called The Problem with Video Prospecting is that I was personally worried, sincerely and deeply, that the movement of video messaging was being hampered and hurt by people doing bad video prospecting. Because today, even though I've been at this for 12 years and sent more than 15,000 videos, I still get replies that are like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. How did you do that? I've never had such a nice reply before, right? So the problem is the more people are doing this with freemium tools and with kind of like unguided processes, they're essentially doing the same crappy prospecting with the same crappy message for the same crappy list that isn't, there's no discipline around any of it. It's all the same stuff. But now you're putting a face on it and you're teaching people that video messages aren't this wonderful opportunity to create human to human moments in between real interaction. But instead you're teaching them, oh, this is how we do this crappy prospecting now. I got it. It was a shallow short-term attention play. And so the second reason I teach competitors, sometimes customers, how to do it better is that I care about the movement and I want more people to do it well. And the third is that no one's fixed.
Yeah.
Your contract expires at some point. And I want to be in that conversation. It also helps me learn more too. And so it's like this broad tent idea. It's one of the reasons you raise up to the problem rather than the product alone. The product is a small part of this market. I want a big conversation where more people are normalizing and doing video messaging because it's got these wonderful, unique properties that are best of what you and I and the folks in chat and in the group are doing now, direct human interaction, but with the speed and convenience of an asynchronicity of sending out emails or Slack messages or LinkedIn DMs or text messages or whatever. Like it plays this perfectly unique role in the middle. And so a movement of people who believe that, who practice that, you know, some people in the community are watching the leaders in the community and what they're doing and what they're saying and what they're teaching. It's not just me. I have a privilege to meet people like every month. They're like, oh yeah, I teach BombBomb at, you know, about 2-3 times a year because we have this monthly thing where we invite people in and teach them something. Like, it's amazing. So like, that's the power of the community, is that it's not just yours. You're just an important voice in it and you're facilitating some of the connection around it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how you put it as like the raw material, right? If you're everything that you just said right now is very long-term thinking, right? The idea that, hey man, your contract expires eventually or whatever, as long as we're evangelizing this problem, it's going to elevate the space. It's going to, you know, I don't want to get categorized as a cheesy prospector guy that's just doing it in a different medium. I want to like establish this thing as a real use for a real problem that we're encountering. And if what you're trying to do is to gather insights and really help people finding the best, you know, like pure source for these insights within your super consumers and really like seeking to create that watering hole where you can concentrate all that stuff to create iteration rapidly and have like the word spread quicker for the benefit of bettering the problem, makes a lot of sense of how you're putting that. Ethan, man, I really enjoy talking to you, man.
I always enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. I just admire the way that you communicate. I don't think you've used a single filler word this entire hour. Everything you say is on point. Like the philosophically what you stand for, I find very little space between what you believe and what I believe and how I want to sound when you speak. So it's really, really awesome, man. Anything, I'm promoting the hell out of the Chief Evangelist podcast. Anything that you want to promote or send people to, what's the best place to connect with you, all that stuff.
Sure. First, thank you very much. You are motivating and inspiring to me. It is really important to have the kind of feedback that you have in this type of engagement. This is a privilege. I appreciate you inviting me into this conversation, the recorded ones and the non-recorded ones. And I'm Ethan Butte. Last name is spelled B-E-U-T-E. I'm on all the social networks as Ethan Butte. Chief Evangelist is, it's just called Chief Evangelist. It's a little mountainscape, kind of like a deep blue purple look. And I also made a LinkedIn page for it where I'm very actively publishing stuff. So you can search Chief Evangelist as a business page on LinkedIn. BombBomb is BombBomb everywhere. And my other podcast is the Customer Experience Podcast.
That's right. I didn't even talk about the Customer Experience Podcast. Another great podcast. Once, but can we give Casey, what's Casey's company that produces that show for you, man? They're great.
Okay. Shout out to Casey Cheshire, Ringmaster. He and I have been talking off and on for a long time. He had me on his podcast years ago. And you know how some people like you just click with and you're like, we're going to talk a couple times a year, just for no particular reason, except that we should. He was one of those guys. And so I was telling him about how much more often people were finding that blog post and reaching out to me. And he was like, now is the time. You're the guy. This is a thing. I'll produce this for you to make it easier. Cause I don't have any budget. I'm not monetizing this. It's enough just to pay for extra subscriptions and stuff. Now I got to like upgrade my production value too. So I'm like spending all this money out of my own pocket just because I believe in it. And he believed in it too. So shout out to Casey Cheshire as well.
I love the man. Sometimes the evangelist needs a hype man, you know, like you need somebody to push you out there, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate you doing this, Ethan.
I really found it fascinating how this idea of an evangelist is so useful, right? Like this idea of someone that's interacting with the market, that is refining the point of view by gaining insights, creating content around it, right? Like we basically explained it 10 different ways. I really think it boils down to that whole tip of the spear on the point of view. And, you know, I just think that as AI continues to proliferate, this is only going to get more important to have a specific point of view that isn't just BS content out there. Speaking of which, there's a lot of good content being made by podcasters. So I'm going to Podcast Movement Denver 2023. It's an end of May. Ethan lives out there, probably going to hang out with him and a bunch of other people. So would love to see you out there at PM Denver. I think it's a really, really great idea to go to conferences with content creators because it's just like networking on fleek. So I hope to see you there. Probably that Sunday before it. Probably going to do like a group hike with people that I know and love in that area. So maybe you're there. We'd love to see you there. That's it. And of course, got to thank my team, as always. Number one, I always thank Roanne because she just keeps me doing all the things I need to be doing as the account manager on this project. Gina, who's built this amazing world-class culture and brought us an amazing team and recruited amazing talent, like her right-hand Marge, who makes everything happen. JP, our employee number one, who does all the cool stuff, right? He's making all the videos, he's making all the audio stuff. Everything that you see and touch is touched by the creative director of our company, JP, employee number one, who is training another awesome creative, Philippe, to follow in his footsteps and do great things for us, like the client activations that we do for our clients, and repurposing that type of content. All helped by Rita, our content strategist, who basically takes the things that we promise and make sure that you get the results that we say based on the content that we are creating, right? Like making sure it's all congruent, the story is right, that you're getting the results that you need. Our two awesome account managers, Joanna and Joyce, and our amazing superstar writer, Nicola, who has been my buddy now for going on like 4 or 5 years. He's turning into a man. When I first started mentoring when he was 13, he interviewed me on a podcast, and now he's becoming a world-class writer. So I want to thank the whole team, and I want to encourage you to always, always consider the impact of relationships being more valuable than transactions. See you next week.